Hi, everybody. I hope you're all well. To all my new listeners, welcome to the Doc Malik podcast. For all the people who've been following me on the journey from the beginning and in the, over the last few months, thank you for sticking with me and supporting me. I love you. The tribe, the clan is getting bigger every day. For all those of you that don't know, there are just two companies now that I've got affiliate codes with. These are companies that I use their products. I recommend them because I like them. I trust them. They're good people. But do your own research, Hunter Gather and Root Wellness. You can see the details in the show notes. Have a look, peruse their websites and use my code. You get a discount. I get a discount. So I get a commission, 10%. So everyone's a winner. So look into that, please. Hunter Gather and Root Wellness. I would also say, please, if you are listening to the show and loving the content, support me because 99% of my support actually is through my paid subscribers. And if you aren't, I would say that a third of my content is behind a paywall now. So for especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you are missing out on one third of the content and you're missing out on things like our special live stream once a month and ability to chat to me and other members of the clan. So please do look into it. I just want to say thank you to a few people. I want to say thank you to Jaded. They left a note on my Substack when they subscribed as a paid subscriber. I have been following you quietly for about 6 months. I've wanted to support you for a while, but I'm on disability, so I have a very small income. Tonight, I decided it's time to push the button and go for it. The last few years have been a total nightmare for me, and I've really struggled, like yourself and all of the truth speakers. You are the one I've decided to support. Thank you, Jaded. I mean, the fact that, you know, you don't have much of an income either and you're supporting me, you know, it means a lot to me. I mean, that's real sacrifice and real love, and I really appreciate it. Francis Leader, I only pay for a very few Substack writers. I support you because one, your stuff is broad-ranging and very interesting. Two, you have several interviews behind the paywall, and I especially want to hear them. Three, I think you deserve the money for the amount of effort you put into your work. Thank you. Well, thank you, Francis. I mean, I have to admit, I do work 7 days a week, and it's pretty insane right now. Oh God, I'm just interviewing so many people. And it's just trying to keep up is hard. Peter Milligan, hi Ahmed. I'm already a subscriber on Spotify, but decided to sign up here as well because I'm so impressed with the quality, variety, and number of podcasts you are doing. Like others, I'm struggling to keep up and all I have to do is listen. How you manage to do so much while also attending to your young family is truly inspiring. I hope to meet up one day, but can see how busy you must be. Peter, my friend, oh man, I am a bit of a workaholic. I get that from my dad. I love working, but juggling my work-life balance has actually been quite difficult. I mean, I took a long time to get my work-life balance in order, and I think I had it for about 4 or 5 years, but it's all gone out the window since last September, October, when I basically got suspended from my main hospital. I just went into overdrive. I just want to say thanks also to Bobby. Bobby Cameron recommended someone to me and she recommended a potential guest and I'll actually be speaking to her tonight, that guest. That guest is Rebecca. Rebecca Charles lost her daughter to medical protocols during the COVID era. Well, basically COVID medical protocols killed her. And it's an absolutely heart-wrenching story. I spoke to her a couple of days ago, and at Bobby's request, Bobby said, please, please get in touch. You need to know about the story. You just basically put it in front of me and said, look, check this out. So I'll be speaking to her tonight to raise awareness. And I want to thank people like Bobby and all the other people who email me and contact me and recommend potential guests. I absolutely love you all. Thank you for all of you who have done supporter stories. Just to let you know, I am running ridiculously behind. I mean, there's some podcasts that I've had since 3-4 months that I've still not posted. One of my friends, Hugh McCarthy, keeps asking me, when are you going to post my podcast? I've kind of gone crazy and started chatting to lots of people who I feel deserve a voice and need to be heard. But it means like I'm just, speaking to too many people, recording too many podcasts and struggling to release them all in time. I need to work around this so that it's more sustainable. But you would not believe it. I'm actually booked up, folks, till July. it's kind of crazy. Anyway, I'm now loving this job. I love the community and clan that we've built up. And like I said, to all the supporters out there, I love you all. All right, enjoy this podcast. Fascinating young man, Monty. Is that beautiful? Look at that. Look, chickens.
It's lovely.
Shame you can't hear them. I love the chicken noises. I love the... burr, 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 burr. It's just so cute. Anyway, yeah, we were talking about names. I think it's really nice when you have a name that is different and memorable and unique. I mean, you don't want a name that's too crazy.
Nope.
But Montgomery Toms. I mean, it's an unusual name because normally it's Tom Montgomery.
Yeah. It's quite substantial. It means people don't forget me. And when I go and shake someone's hand and say, my name's Montgomery Toms, you know, it leaves an impression. So yeah, it's definitely benefited me.
Monty. But I'll call you Monty. Is that all right?
Absolutely fine, yeah.
So Monty, you came on my radar when I saw you on Twitter. And I have to give a shout out to Vanessa Gray and Jane Lewis. One of those two, I can't remember. It might be Natalie Bradbury. Anyway, these three ladies, wonderful women, are in a special little WhatsApp group.
Mm-hmm.
And they are always looking out for potential guests for me.
Yeah.
And recommending them to me. And they're just wonderful women. And oh, Marianne Walsh as well. So I forgot. I knew there was someone I was missing. And we constantly say, hey, what about this guy? Or what about this lady? Or this person's interesting. Mm-hmm. So just in case people are wondering, where do I get all my guests from? I get them from multiple kind of areas. Like former guests will say, hey, I'd like to recommend you someone. Or, you know, the listeners or supporters will say to me, oh, you should check this person out. And then I have my little group, my little gang. And that's where you came in. And and they said, you need to get this young lad on. Because one of the things, Monty, is that there's not very many young people who are either awake or be willing to speak up. And I can see why. So I've said that this war that we're in between good and evil, or, you know, light and dark, is really being fought on the whole, mainly, not exclusively, by people of a certain generation.
Yes.
And they are the Generation X. I'm in that Generation X. So from the late 30s to early 60s, you know, stretching it a bit. Mm-hmm. But that's the group, because they knew better. They knew when their parents were living a better life than they have. They know when their standard of living was better, quality of life was better. They were pre-digital, pre-social media, pre-mobile phones. And over the years, they've seen right in front of their eyes, everything go tits up, pear-shaped.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're like, this is BS.
Yep.
They also tend to be a little bit more financially secure mm-hmm. and are willing to speak up. The baby boomers, on the whole, have let us down. And the younger generations, the millennials, let's just not go there. Mm-hmm. Gen Z, I mean, you guys are, you know, you don't have a career at this moment. Financially, you're not stable. One, you might be totally brainwashed. Two, if you're awake, you're just too terrified to say anything because of the repercussions.
Yep.
So you, my friend, are a bit of an anomaly.
Indeed.
Do you want to tell me why you're an anomaly? Why are you sitting in front of me? Why did I think it was important to come and get you on my show? For all the people who don't know about you, what is different about you?
Well, I always start off by giving people a bit of my quick background. And that is when COVID hit, lockdowns hit, I was 14 and now I'm 18.
Still a baby, mate.
Still a baby. soon, not far away from 19. But it's such an interesting journey to go on, because they're your prime years of your life and it's your teenage years. And you're right. When you're a teenager, what do you want to do? You want to relax. You want to enjoy your youth. But I threw all of that away, instead indulged in fighting against the system, fighting against the education system. And I always say, you know, not only did I not wear a mask, for example, but I liked to tell people why.
Yeah.
And that causes quite a stir, especially when there's a tremendous amount of vanity and envy amongst my generation. And they don't like to see people standing out from the crowd, which is nothing new. You see that, you know, you've got people bully other students is very common. But when you try and bully a student and they're not fazed by it, that's when they get very frustrated. And I mean, my journey through the education system, I've kind of spoken about this so much, and it's so dystopian and alien to remind people of, but I can give you some sort of like basic overview of what it was like when I returned to the education system after lockdown. And we walk in, for example, there were circles on the floor that we all have to stand in.
Yeah.
Ridiculous things like that. And I was careless in lockdown. I grew up similar to environment to where you are here, more of a countryside environment. I wasn't originally based in London. And that meant that I kind of was protected from the Big Brother city environment. So I just went out, did what I wanted, and my parents were completely free and easy about everything. When I went back into school, however, I was not prepared for how far people had gone regards to committing to this narrative. And I just thought it was a joke. So I just instantly rebelled. It's in my nature. I don't know, I'm not standing in the circle. And then I started to see this is actually serious and people really have been captured by this. Because before school broke up, the general consensus was, this is just a cold, don't worry about it. And then suddenly my science teachers are telling me that. And then suddenly I've returned and they're the ones trying to instill fear into the students. And I'm saying, hang on a minute, you're my science teacher. You know, this is science. There's a lot of kind of obvious rights and wrongs here. It's not like a gray area. And yet you're so reluctant to oppose this mainstream narrative. So then came kind of Big Brother aspect of the CCTV cameras. And this is a great example when people talk about surveillance. And I say, well, they'll use the example. There's nothing wrong with cameras being everywhere. If you're not doing anything wrong, then what's the problem? And it's then what can those cameras be used for? Well, in this instance, they were used to track the students. And if they were in contact with one another and there was a positive COVID case, whatever that means from the tremendous amount of false positives that were littered across the school, half the year group would be sent home.
Really?
Yeah.
They were watching on CCTV? Mm-hmm.
So one student would say, I've got a positive case. And they'd go through the CCTV cameras. They'd find each student that had been in contact with that student being in contact with that one, and so on, transmission chain. Then they'd look at the seating plans within the classrooms and the bubbles. And then through that, they would go to each classroom with a clipboard and everyone would walk in and the teacher would walk in and everyone would sigh and they'd go, can these names please be escorted to the school hall? And they'd be funneled out of the classroom, taken into the school hall and sent away for 2 weeks. And what's really interesting is I know for a fact I was in contact with these students 100%. Suddenly I'm the only one on one side of the classroom who was in a 2 meter radius of an infected student. And they didn't send me home. And I thought, why are they not sending me home? That's because they knew I'd walk straight back in the doors and say, I ain't having it. So it was too complicated for them. So there was their double standards. And it was just a constant, I mentioned very briefly.
Was this a private school, state school?
An academy. And this is standard. I share the same story as all other students, except my generation want to forget it. They want to push this away because for them, this is an ugly memory and they just want to catch up with the youth that they've lost. Education now is an indoctrination camp and it is somewhere where students go to have their mind filled with whatever agenda the elites see as necessary to enforce their dystopian, or they may see it as utopian, framework for the world.
Yeah, they definitely think of it as utopian.
Yeah, and it's when I look back on the kind of nudging that was involved within education, even predating lockdowns in regards to climate change, for example, and how that is just fueled into the geography curriculum, and how you have to go through these steps in order to get your qualification. You can't escape it. And whilst I'm young, I could tell you for a fact, I wouldn't wish it on my children and I don't plan on having them too soon, but I wouldn't be putting my children through the education system as it is right now at all.
It's funny you should say that. So I've spoken to a few people,
yeah.
Daniel Prince and a few others, and seriously looking into homeschooling.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I can kind of move on to that and the importance of that and my kind of perspective on that shortly. I will just finish my little final breakdown of that was school.
Yeah.
And then after school, I moved on to college and I went and studied photography. I'm very creative, not amazing with a pencil, but give me a camera, old-fashioned film camera, medium format, playing in the dark room, all these sorts of things. That's where I really get stuck. I'm very passionate about it. And when I went to college, I was praying that the lockdown measures and mask mandates would all be over. Because by this point, I was thinking, right, I am ready to detach from this fight back and this sort of micro-activism within the education system, have some friends and have some fun. I'm now turning 16. Now I really am at the age where I can start doing something.
Mm.
And it looked like that until the government advised schools to implement masks again. And I use that word advised because there was no mandate and there was no laws that were born, what they call laws, pushed forward. And the reason it's important is my college chose to implement them.
I know this is true.
And when they chose to implement them, they took me into a meeting and said, listen, we know your stance on this, but we're going to ask that you wear a visor. I said, no. I went, what do you mean, no? I went, well, it's just not very complicated. Clearly, you don't know my stance. I'm very strong on this. I'm not going to wear a visor. And then by that point, I sort of an initiation of a fight back again. And I went home and I made a decision. This is going to last longer than I expected. And I went back in. I took down all of the posters, hands, face, space, busted up the sanitized stations, took leaflets in, handed them out to people, focused my photography, photographs around fighting against the narrative. You know, it's very challenging to keep a balance between fighting back and also staying civil and respectful with the people that are trying to enforce these rules.
Yes.
And
you don't want to come across as a crazy person.
No. And it's very challenging. And it's very hard to keep that balance.
Because that's one of the ways they can get you. Say, oh, you're crazy. You got mental illness and you've lost the plot.
You make one slip up.
One slip up.
And they will take you on about it. And I actually know 100%. A student who was removed from his college and was sent down the route of prevent. And which is obviously to do linked with extremism.
Yeah, you should explain that because I've got a lot of listeners who aren't from the UK. What does prevent?
So my understanding of the prevent scheme is that when you have opinions of quite an extreme nature,
you're radicalized. You're
radicalized, and something has infiltrated your mind. You should be put through a scheme which basically helps you. It's almost can take the form of therapy, or may call it re-education. Which is a bit patronizing. But for someone of my opinions, if I was to be so vocal and strident to the point of just blunt statements that didn't have much nuance involved, they would cling on to that and I'd be thrown out of education. So you've got to be very careful with what you say. And because it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you don't have a sturdy education system that can really nourish young minds with good vocabulary and articulacy, then you're going to have students who don't have the ability to stand and fight. And I think it was the Rockefellers that said, we want a nation of workers, not thinkers. And they were key in redesigning the Victorian education system.
Yeah, well, the thing is, absolutely. Look, if you don't know the words, you don't know the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say the words or know the words. You can't think these ideas. So you restrict the vocabulary.
Yes.
You keep your vocabulary limited. Absolutely. And then your ability to think creatively or question is diminished.
This is where homeschooling comes into it, you see. I said I'd come back to it.
And Yeah.
I'm absolutely blessed with the upbringing I've had. My mother is a psychologist, and my father, by master's degree, is a philosopher. So he both, imagine combining those sorts of...
You've answered my question. You've answered my next question. There you go.
Sort of upbringing is very strong.
Yeah,
it's very creative. It's very detailed, and an immense amount of time was put in from both my mum and dad to educate me outside of the education system. And I've said this before. I even thought about homeschooling. It frustrates me how parents offload the responsibility of education completely to the education system, and we see this in sex education, for example, where parents are now completely cut out from the world of educating their children about what was once just the birds and the bees. And when you give education the power to enforce a mindset onto your children, you're not just giving it to the education system, you're giving it to the government. And you don't even have to be a critical thinker to realize that the government's not perfect. So it's...
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who blindly believe the government's amazing and wonderful.
There are.
And, you know, I was going to ask you, like, why is it that you're so different? Why is it that you're one of the, you know, tiny percentage of kids that spoke out? Kind of makes sense, though. I think you nailed it, like your parents, ultimately.
Yeah, and I'd be arrogant to turn around and say that at the age of 14, I had the world worked out. You know, it was my mum and dad, my mum who looked at nudge theory and understood the psychological terror that they were instilling onto the population and how that was being used through the media. And it was my father, who is also very scientifically minded and broke down the science behind it, which is something I'm not perfect at, but he's very good at explaining it. And he would sit with me. What else were we going to do? You know, everything was locked down. So we would sit and just talk and talk.
You're so lucky, because that what you're telling me is you've got this family where mum and dad are on the same page,
yep.
totally understand what's going on, are yep. awake, aren't conspiracy theorists, but they're conspiracy realists.
Yep.
And they're talking to you, sharing what's going on and educating you and empowering you. So that's where you must have had the confidence to know that what you're doing is right and you can stand up to the authorities, because you need that confidence as a kid,
well, more
as an adult as well.
More importantly, it was about knowing that however outlandish I was within school, I had a dad and a mum to back me up. Mm. And what was fortunate is I'd kind of built up a quite a polite reputation at school dealing with teachers. I've always been a little bit, you know, bolshy and a bit confident and cocky. It's always been in my nature. But because I got a nice smile when I was a kid and could kind of get away with a lot.
Good looking lad, yeah, great hair, cheeky grin.
it meant that I kind of pre-COVID built up a bit of a rapport. So they knew my parents well, and they knew my dad would... They knew my dad. They had a few parents' evenings with him, which was enough to sort of understand his approach to bringing me up and how hands-on he is. And because of that, you're absolutely right. I had a framework of very protective and supportive parents, and which armed me with great articulacy, great knowledge, and with politeness and respect, which allows me to navigate through difficult situations. So yeah, I am very lucky.
Ooh, man. Yeah, I feel for all the people, because I was one of them where, you know, husband and wife are not on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Causes a lot of friction, a lot of tension,
yeah.
a lot of pain.
I've heard too many of these stories where you got a mum and dad who can't align. But my mum and dad's history is they both grew up in London. They both met in London, and they both grew up in a period of pure freedom of the 1970s, where I wasn't there, but I can't sit here and argue that it was completely free. And I'm sure we could delve into all sorts of stories of the 1970s, which aren't perfect. But what I do know is they didn't have endless surveillance. They weren't being told what to do all the time. They didn't have speed cameras tracking them everywhere. You could do 90 miles an hour in London, and now you can't even, you know, do 20, and soon you'll have a carbon footprint that tracks you. You know, my experience of London, because I've now returned to that city to sort of retrace my roots, and because I feel very connected to it, it's nothing like they experienced. And because they've grown up through that time and understand what it is to be free and be rebellious, that's been, you know, translated into their children.
I think people have forgotten. People have forgotten what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the younger generation, they forgetting. They've just never known anything different.
Yeah.
Do you despair about your generation? Is there a lot more people awake and are just too scared to say anything? Or are they genuinely brainwashed? Like, one of the things is, you know, the kids are constantly being told, you know, at school, I know this, that, you know, we're killing the planet.
Yeah.
And then my kids know that's all BS, because I talk to them. I'm educating them at the system and saying, look, by the way, this documentary is very nice animals, but what the commentator is saying about the planet and the sea levels, it's all nonsense. We're not killing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Carbon's good for you. So my kids know to push back, but
good. So
many kids aren't being told this, and their parents buy into it as well. David Attenborough said this on the BBC. Of course it's true.
Yeah, of course.
What's the reality, you know, with your generation? What's happening?
Well, you've got two things. You've got nature and nurture. So, what, you know, you've got the nature of how children are, and looking at whether they're kind of, I'm quite an extroverted character, so I have the confidence to be outspoken with. There are many people and children that are just quite introverted and don't want to stand up and be so strident. So you have that. But the more importantly, I split my generation into three categories. You've got the majority, which have some critical thinking. They're fairly just understanding of the world. But I always say the fundamental issue with my generation is not that they have a bad opinion, it's that they don't have an opinion. They don't want an opinion. And the problem with this is you can't strike up debate. And debate is beautiful, because as this is a great podcast, I won't learn as much talking with you as I will having a conflict with somebody and growing my debate and strengthening what I believe in. And because of that, because my generation are so... The word I would use is flaccid when it comes to dealing with anything remotely controversial. They just want to run away. So that's the majority. Then you've got a real, real minority, which is the me's, the people that share my ideas and are so strident in it. And I do know people. I know Students Against Tyranny, which is headed by James Harvey. And he's an excellent individual who keeps fighting back against kind of the university side of things as well, which I can get onto later. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the other minority, which is bigger than our side. And that is the people who have truly been captured on a quite disturbing level, who believe in worshipping the devil. I've seen this in front of me, and I rarely use this as a way to motivate my point of fight back, but it's quite overwhelming seeing people of my generation wear openly satanic symbols, and the way that then links into the whole pronoun debate and changing people's names and promoting transitioning young children and all these kinds of things. And this translates into universities. The university I went to was an arts-based university. I do photography. And for some reason, I'm not saying that this is blanketed across my generation, but this was really concentrated here. And I walked in dealing with people. And the reason I bring up such a strong word, such as kind of satanic symbolism, is because their stance is just as strong as my stance in terms of how motivated they are to fight for what they believe in, but on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So there's me walking in my suit, all confident, and thinking, you know, I'm going to fight back and keep going. But I wasn't dealing with the people who don't have an opinion anymore. I was dealing with the people who do have an opinion and just like me want to stand up and say something about it. And it led to death threats. It led to some truly just grim mob culture of them wanting to take down my name. And
I can imagine you being quite outnumbered.
Completely. But listen, I mentioned this name just before we started this podcast, Ramis, and he is a dear, dear friend of mine. And he is really what the man who motivated me so much to keep fighting when I used to travel back, leave London and go back to education away from London. Is he said to me, Monty, you have to understand, this is when I was 16 and I attended an outreach march giving information directly to the people. And he said, Monty, if there's a million people telling you to say yes and you know the answer is no, always say no. And I know it's a simple thing to say, but it stuck with me and that played through my head relentlessly. And it doesn't matter. For now, I don't see people in front of me. I don't see these people saying yes, yes, yes anymore. I just believe what I believe and I'm very strident. And that's not to say I'm closed-minded, because I'm not. I'm very open to develop my debate. But when it comes to things like vaccine deaths, transitioning children, and things that are not far right, they're just right so far. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
I won't budge on it. And nothing at this point in time will stop me from fighting for what I believe in.
So why did you stop university? I mean, it sounds like you didn't stay for very long.
No, lasted 3 weeks.
What happened?
Turned up to university, and for once, I kept my mouth shut because I was told by friends and family, just give it a go because you're here for an education, but this time you're paying for it. So try and get the most out of it. And I thought, okay, I'm reluctant to do that, but I'll give it a go. So I walk in and they asked me, can you please put on a pronoun badge? Was their number one thing I said.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
That was my introduction, pronoun badge. So I said, no, I quite like that word. No, thank you. And
people need to be comfortable in that word.
Yeah, very comfortable.
It's funny, kids are very good at saying no, but when they get older, they seem to lose it. But
yeah.
My kids don't have a problem saying no.
But when I said no, they were quite taken aback. They were like, really? They went, but we've got he, him ones, if you don't want to identify as anything else. I went, I don't... Don't you understand? I'm not inclined to take any pronoun badge. Well, that was step one. That was my introduction. And then it went on to a piece of paper we were given, which we were expected to observe the rules of the institution. And the rules of the institution were as follows. I'm not going to name them all. I'll name the primary, most disturbing ones. Respect people's pronouns. So if you're going to engage in a conversation with anyone, it's very important.
What the hell has this got to do with learning?
Yeah, it's a very good point. Very good point.
Your hair still looks amazing, don't worry.
Thank you. It's got nothing to do with learning, and it's completely distracting, and it's very concerning how this was the dominant theme on my first few days of university, supposed to actually discussing my course, bearing in mind integrated into a photography course was gender studies and critical race theory as well in terms of an essay structure. And I was only there for 3 weeks, so who knows what more was being pushed upon the students. But this piece of paper said you must ask people about their pronouns. That was rule number kind of like five. Then there was also observe unspoken hierarchies and check your privilege. And what they were basically saying is, if I'm white, so I'm a white individual, and because of this, we have such an oppressive Western world, we must observe unspoken hierarchies. So I'm speaking to a black person because I'm white. That could be quite intimidating to them. So I have an unspoken hierarchy, was the way they worded it. And I just thought,
seriously,
this is that is the most divisive and horrific thing.
That's racist in itself.
I know.
That's a frank.
And try saying that. That. It is truly.
Because it even
leaves me speechless. And to be sat there in that room, and then you've got, and I'll just list these off. Don't be transphobic. Don't be ableist. Don't be homophobic. Don't be misogynistic. Don't be classist. You know, it helped me being there in a three-piece suit. You know, they all thought I was a Tory, which they couldn't be further from the truth.
They shouldn't be so judgmentalist.
Yeah, you can try that one. I mean, but the thing is, they truly believe what they're doing is good.
I know, they're so brainwashed.
Yeah, it's not like, so then you've got the students who are...
They genuinely think they're so good in doing what they're doing. And they're so blind. And the problem is, in their virtuosity, they think that anyone who doesn't think like them must by definition be evil then.
Yes.
And that then gives them permission to be cruel and horrible to that evil person. Because if there's an evil person, what do you do with that evil person? Mm-hmm. You don't be nice to an evil person. You're horrible to an evil person.
Of course.
So they justify being cruel and horrible to you because they have deemed you as being evil.
Yes, and white.
And white.
And straight. And male.
And they don't see the bigger picture of how hypocritical and how evil in itself their actions are.
Absolutely.
They're so deluded.
So deluded. And it's
so deluded.
When you're walking around a campus and you've got kind of electronic screens everywhere, and this applies to at college as well, not university. There are electronic screens everywhere saying respect people's pronouns. What do you want to be? You know, wearing ribbons. Because if you're gender fluid, I think it is, it means that your gender fluctuates. So one day you may have a pink ribbon, that means this. One day you may have a blue ribbon, that means this. You know, this is the way these people
This is a mental illness.
Absolutely. And try saying that and getting liked. And what actually happened is I put out a video addressing effectively my university. I was like, okay, I'm not going to cause one-to-one conflict on the campus. And I'm also not going to enter a social media spat because it's just childish and it's just infantile. Instead, I'm going to continue what I'm doing and put out a video. This video is very simple. If you believe you are this, you're not. And I think that's a mental illness. That was the overall premise. Well, that circulated quite quickly. And on my return, suddenly I was completely isolated. And I realized I'm 3 weeks into a 3-year course. And there's not a chance that I'm going to thrive here or benefit here apart from fighting constantly with a target on my back. So whilst I didn't get directly kicked out, which would have happened because I would have done a piece of photography, which would have just wouldn't have been able to be linked to their institution at all. I know that I would have my motivation would be fighting back all the time, which necessarily isn't a healthy motivation, but it's very difficult when you're being forced and kettled by other students. So I sat and had a conversation, said I'm just going to have to withdraw from this university because I don't feel like you support normal individuals like me, who I'm not that. It's not that my views are controversial. So that my views are just how they were before, and that's deemed as controversial. And they had no question. They didn't want to fight me on that. They just went, oh, no problem. So I knew that there'd been reports made and allegations, which I'd already been told that on my first day of university, someone made a report that I accused gays of being paedophiles. It was just an instant slander on my name, which obviously isn't true, but that they just use anything to try and isolate me. And it doesn't really work very well. And they think me leaving was a failure. And they won, but they didn't win. I'm just stronger and I'm doing great. So well done.
Maybe we've got a lot in common. You know, we've got a lot in common. I mean, not the hair or the height or the color. But apart from that, yeah, we got
there may be some unspoken hierarchies. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. You're my oppressor.
Yeah.
Do you not think it's crazy how much they say they value all this diversity, but they don't value your
I said this.
Your opinions, your beliefs. That's the kind of diversity that's not allowed. That's not acceptable.
I said by you enforcing these sorts of this environment and these principles, you're cutting me out. You're not including everybody, and I'm such a minority now. You know, I am noted by many to just be quite a traditional, old-fashioned English gentleman, which isn't really around anymore. Who wears a suit, who tries to pronounce his T's, and tries to, you know, just have general standards and morals and principles. Nothing far right and crazy, just normal. And now that is being pushed as being draconian and far right, and I've even been called a fascist, you know, and I don't support lockdowns.
You look like a racist.
I don't support lockdowns. I don't support locking down the people. I don't support surveillance. I don't support cashless society. I don't support the mutilation of children. Ah, he must be a fascist. How they come to this conclusion is absolutely baffling.
Man, I'm in the same camp. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm in the same group.
Yeah.
And it's really weird, you know, one of the hospitals, yeah, they referred me for being transphobic because I said, is Dylan Mulvaney a woman?
How dare you?
How dare I? And you know, but on their email signatures and on their websites, they've got the LGBTQ plus minus 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever flag.
Square root.
And so they're making it very clear that they are favoring a belief system. They're for something. And they talk about the inclusivity and diversity. But it's like, what about my thoughts?
Mm.
Maybe I don't agree with this.
Yeah.
Like, why is that not recognized or respected?
Yeah.
But it comes back to, here's this window of acceptability. Anything outside of that is evil. Yeah. You've got a problem and we need to deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not nice.
Yeah. It, when I talk to future generations, you know, younger, but the people before me who aren't even here yet, you know, when I'm 50, 60 years old, and I explain this story to them, if I'm still around and not locked up, along with you and a load of other people.
they're not going to believe it.
They're not going to believe it. And it's a part...
Dude, seriously, they will not believe it. They'll be like, wait, it was controversial to say that a man is a man and a woman is a woman and you can't change?
Well, that is a very optimistic perspective. Or maybe people will look at us and still think we're crazy. Who knows?
Nah, I think we're going to win.
Well, this is a conversation I had recently.
20, 30 years, though.
It's... Depends all sorts of ways of predicting what could happen or being kind of a pessimist or an optimist. My point is very simple. I've always said this. I'm not interested in the outcome as much as I'm interested in my response to what they try and push on me. That I'll always say no. So as long as I say no, I'm not scared. And fear can't get into my head and many other people's heads. They've pushed so far against these horrific agendas that they're willing to put a lot on the line in order to continue to say no. And I will always say no. And I know many other individuals that will say no. And we will always become a majority eventually. Truth will reveal itself, and it is. You know, there is the optimism, and sadly, of course, we're censored, we're shadow banned. But this is why I take it to the streets. This is why you'll catch me on tubes, handing out information, making speeches at King's Cross, relentlessly fighting against what they can't mask, which is word of mouth.
But Monty, what are you going to do in terms of like a job and a career? I mean, you're 18, you're just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need to make some money. You need to make a living. You need to provide for yourself and your home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you got rich parents that can take care of you.
Oh, no.
So, you know, like, what is it? Because a lot of people are, I mean, you've missed the bullet with the student debt, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of kids are coming out now with 60, 80 grand in debt. And when you're shackled with that degree of debt, you're enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to question anything because you're a slave.
Earthly wealth can't bribe me. I'm not interested. Money is important and it's there to aid you in this horrific world and it helps a lot, you know, but I've been offered opportunities which I could have taken me into places, but I would have to sell my soul in order to go there. And it's not in my nature. It's not in my makeup. It's not in my psychology to relent. I never will. Now, that's not to say there isn't a balance, and I'm not being young and naive. I appreciate that money is still an issue, and I'm not stupid to that. I do have a job. I'm a chef. I work very hard. I save as much money as I can. And those who kind of saw me emerge quite quickly on Twitter and stuff and getting all these views will may have noticed that I've not been as consistent with putting out kind of content. And that's because I have been working on myself. You know, I'm not going to stand here and act like I'm throwing everything away. But one thing I have is supportive parents, but I also have parents who will turn around to me and say, "You reap what you sow, son, and you've got to carry your cross." And I will. And I take full responsibility. And my parents are very worried about me. I'm their son. They don't want me necessarily to be throwing away my future. I know my dad is very protective of my interests and just wants me to be young. But I'm afraid he reaps what he sows as well. And he brought up quite a disagreeable son. So, I know that I'll always try my best to keep a balance. And it is definitely a concern in regards to money. But it's not the fundamental building blocks of life, not from my perspective anyway.
Yeah. Well, okay. Being a chef is pretty cool. It's pretty hard work as well, though.
Very hard work.
You must be right at the bottom of the rung of the ladder, though.
Well,
are you peeling potatoes?
No. I'm senior chef, soon to be promoted. When I was 15, my dad found a notice in a window saying, "We're looking for a chef." Pizza chef at the time. And it was sort of like cash in hands. You know, Saturday kind of work.
It's great.
But I learned
all kids should work.
I learned a skill. And when I went and applied to my job, I got the job. And over Christmas, I worked 50 hours a week. Worked very, very hard to prove myself, learn what I needed to learn. And it's a very stable environment. And I enjoy it. It's creative. I can't sit behind a desk all day. But that's not to say that that's a permanent way of life. I'm looking to develop my own sort of framework, own businesses, own strategies, own side hustles. But you can't have life motivated by money. It's not something at all to believe in. And my parents come from very working class stock. My grandfather was a window cleaner, and my dad grew up in North London, never had too much money. My mum, South London, exactly the same. And they both went away and worked really hard and had me and my sister. And now I am going to continue their legacy and still work hard, and I will never be given everything on a plate. I've done well in terms of an upbringing. I'm very, very grateful.
Mate, that's so nice to hear. It's so nice that you acknowledge it and value it. A lot of people, one, don't have that wonderful upbringing. We were talking about this yesterday, my wife and I and some other parents. My kids were over having a play date. We were talking about some of the other children in the class, one in particular who's really acting quite inappropriate for her age and saying things inappropriately. And we all agreed, all the parents agreed that this was not the child's fault, it was the parents' fault. Mm-hmm. That this child was learning from their parents.
Yeah.
And we had noticed that the parents were very hands-off, just let the kids run wild.
Yeah.
Weren't really teaching them, were making them watch TV programs and films far above their age.
Yeah.
We're talking about kids that are six watching 18-year-old programs.
Yeah.
Violence, murder, death, language. And that's not the kids' fault. These are the parents' fault. And a lot of kids aren't brought up in an environment that's conducive to, you know, love and learning and...
Yeah, I mean, it's purely cyclical. What I mean by that is the teachers... Let me give you an example. My geography teacher left my school when I was in year 7 when I started, and that was my geography teacher when I got to year 11. So they were in sixth form, graduated from sixth form, got a teaching degree, and then came back and taught me, a student at the same school. So he'd literally just come out of the same system that I'd come out of. And the reason that I was going to come out of. And the reason this is important is because when you have teachers who are now gone through what I've just gone through and have no opinion and have no motivation to have critical thinking and stand up and say no and just follow the narrative, you're constantly just in a loop of regression. Students gradually getting more complacent, less...
compliant.
Yeah.
More compliant.
Yeah, more compliant. And that then translates into parents as well. So it's very dangerous when you go down the homeschooling route as well, because you haven't got parents who have been educated by a good education system in order to teach their children well. It's very complicated, and it's a hard one to dig ourselves out of.
You know, when you said that, that's a really good point you make. When you said that a lot of people just don't have an opinion, like the majority don't.
Yeah.
Why don't they have an opinion? Are they scared to have an opinion? Are they fearful of cancel culture? I mean, is it just been drummed into them? Be vanilla, beige, and magnolia? What is the reason?
They're programmed from a young age, certainly, and to not have an opinion. It's much easier to not have an opinion. And then when you do have an opinion, it's made very difficult to have that opinion if it doesn't run with the narrative. And more importantly, I used to be very angry with my generation. So you get very frustrated with them. And I used to shout. I used to be filled with rage. Why can't you stand up and say no?
Why can't you see?
Why can't you see? And the truth is, maybe they can. I can't say for sure, but I can also understand why they may, after 4 years of their life or 3 years of their life being disrupted, mm-hmm. want to go and have fun and want to enjoy their youth. Now, I say this to people, and when my generation look at me and say, why are you doing this? Why? And I say, what, you think I like it? You think I like being lonely? You think I like not having friends? You think I like putting everything on the line and risking? You think I like those days when I go home and I sit and I really am unhappy with the way the world is, and I have to focus on the reality and can't escape it, and I won't refuse to drink excessively. I refuse to take drugs and distract myself. I believe in going to the gym. I believe in masculinity. I believe in stoicism. I believe in having unifying, strong family units with masculine men who can lead the household. These are my principles, and it's not easy to go down that route. And I say to people, please listen, because if you listen, you should listen to me because of how invested I am and how much I've thrown away. I wouldn't do it if I was just talking utter nonsense. So please listen. But sadly, my generation, it's really, really hard. And I've gone through all different stages of being forceful and trying to kind of push information on my generation. I've been sensitive and tried to have one-to-one conversations. I've tried just leaving leaflets on the table and hoping that they read them.
It's hard.
We're fighting a rather big force, a rather big entity. And it's something that, as I said, I will never stop. I will never stop saying no to things I don't believe to be right.
So you're living your true self. You're not living a lie.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, some people don't even know they're living in a lie.
Yeah.
Some people do, and it eats them up.
Yes.
Whereas you look very happy, very confident, because you know what? You're on the side of right. You're living the truth.
Yeah.
And that's important.
I say this a lot, is I've met so many people who claim to be a freedom fighter, who claim that they are advocating for freedom of speech and a completely alternative ideology to what the mainstream media are pushing forward. But really, they're wrapped up in their own ideologies as well. You see, we are pack animals, and we do follow certain ideas, and we feel far more comfortable to offload responsibility to something else. And my father has been telling me to read a book by Eric Fromm, which I don't know if you're familiar with that author, called Fear of Freedom. But the general consensus is that individuals are scared to be free.
Mm.
And it's much easier to offload the responsibility to something greater. And the truth of it is that people like myself, people like you, people like my father, I know very, very few people who I can truly say are free. And when you're truly free, it comes out in your actions. You lose your job. You give up on education. You give up on money. You don't sell your soul. And to be truly free is really hard in the reality of life, but is very rewarding when you go to sleep at night and you know that you're doing your very best to fight for what you believe in, fight for truth, and protect what you can.
Yeah, you sleep well even without a grounding mat. That was just a joke. But, you know, like, mate, you're right. You're 100% right. People do fear freedom. You know, there's this great scene in the movie Django Unchained. You ever watch it?
No.
Right. Well, this you know, black American slave.
Yep.
Frees open this cage in which two slaves are being transported.
Mm.
He beats up the slave master and opens the cage and goes, come on, escape. guess what? They stay in the cage.
Yes.
The door's wide open. Mm-hmm. They can run. They can get out.
Then I would suggest you watch a film called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And it's the same principle, set in a mental asylum. And do you know the film?
Oh, yeah. I've read the book.
There we go. You've one-upped me. that's another very similar metaphor. And was my father showed me that film before lockdowns and references it a lot as being very important, as symbolizing how people are far more comfortable to be protected. And that, you know, that's why we had lockdowns. It's when the government said, oh, there's this terrible virus, but don't worry, we have the answer. The reason people played with the rules is because they wanted to offload responsibility and they truly don't want to be free. These people, they want to cage themselves in. And the bit that we have to change is not the nitty gritty details about the science and lockdowns. It's about the fundamental principles of freedom and thinking freely. And because the education system is morphed to the way it has, as being completely restrictive and claustrophobic for young minds, and because the media rams down the older generation's throats sat on their sofa that they should be scared, and because the government is constantly focused on manipulating all the spectrums of young, old, middle-aged minds, they've done a very, very good job of it, and we've seen it. And I always said that the mask implementation was the perfect example of them, their way of doing a massive social experiment to see who would comply and who wouldn't. And if they can get people to wear a mask, then they can get people to do anything.
100%. So listen, buddy, we know this has been taking place over decades, this Marxist, Malthusian indoctrination, infiltration, and whether you know, I mean, you look at even Nazis, National Socialist, right?
Yeah.
Communist, socialist, the fascist. It's all left, right, BS. It all leads to totalitarianism, but it's through the same means. This, you know, the masses have to be controlled.
Yeah.
And it is really quite Marxist.
Always be worried when someone turns around and says, I think we should do something and it will benefit you. And that's the general...
Especially for the greater good.
Yeah, this is all for the greater good, and this is here to benefit you. Well, of course, every politician and institution or party is going to say that, and I do appreciate that, you know, obviously, at some point, there is some truth, maybe somewhere along the line. But when people use that as their way, their main motive to pushing forward what they truly believe to be right for you, who are them to say that? And you mentioned the Socialist Workers Party. I've had one-to-one interactions on the street with them when I see them handing out leaflets advocating Stalin, and they're very open about it, and drag queen storytelling and all sorts for children. And I say to them, why do you believe this? It's a very small little statement, and the response I get is violence, shouting, complete inability to communicate logic or thought. And what when you look into their eyes and you really look in deep, there's something very concerning in their soul. I don't know what it is, but it's very off-putting. And that's when I learn at that point that we're not dealing necessarily with logic. We're not dealing with left, right. We're not dealing with basic mainstream politics anymore. You said light and dark. I could say good and evil.
I said good and evil as well.
Yeah. And when you there's kind of two stages to our way of thinking. You've got the surface level, as I mentioned, lockdowns are bad. Here's the science as to why it's bad. Masks are bad, and here's why. But then when I realized someone tripped me up about 2 years ago, and they said to me, yeah, but I don't understand, why would they do this? And I actually couldn't answer the question. And I thought, do you know what? I don't know. And then that's when I went away, and maybe more than 2 years ago now, was when I was about 15, and I started to understand the World Economic Forum. I started to understand Bill Gates. I started to understand how money works. I started to understand about all sorts of, Freemasonry, and all these sorts of...
Rockefellers,
Rothschilds, et cetera, the royal family. And then it all starts to fall into place. And then when you get there, when you can finally explain that to somebody in a rational way, then you're in and you can't unknow what you know. And everything suddenly becomes very clear.
Yeah. Yeah. What I was coming to was the fact is they've been doing this a long time and infiltrating by getting into our schools, getting into the universities, getting the lecturers in, getting the politicians, even the politicians who claim to be conservative or anything but conservative. You know, yeah. if you look at what they're doing, the way they've printed money, their fiscal policies, there's nothing conservative about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken decades to brainwash this whole generation of people. What I was saying was like, how do we get out of this? Have you thought about this? Like, how do we
optimism
wake people up?
Have an optimistic response, which is always good.
Be a happy warrior, agreed.
Well, we were nudged, I say we, not specifically us, but the majority of people were nudged in a direction of fear, and they weren't always like this. They weren't all, it's not our human instinct to want to be the way we have become. I'm not sure if that's worded beautifully, but you kind of understand what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is that could be reversed. If something can go one way, the pendulum can go back.
Mm-hmm.
So my sense of optimism is one thing at a time. You're not going to wake up a country overnight. And just as much as it's taken them years, decades to get to where they are now, they did a very good job of it. And it's going to take us decades to do the same.
Mm.
And I've always come back to this point. I'm never going to stop. So if I'm never going to stop, there's always going to be, that's not just me that's like that. There's loads of other people out there. It means there's always going to be a fight back and a pushback. And truth will come out eventually in the mainstream. I believe so. Because good will always triumph.
Yeah. We have to be positive. Have to be. So what's the next steps for you? What are you going to be doing next in terms of campaigning and fighting? So you're doing your chef work.
Yep.
You got yourself a nice girlfriend.
Yes.
She's coming on the show.
She's truly wonderful. And also, she has sustained me through the endless conflict I've gone through with support. And when I left home and moved to London and went to university, it gave me confidence to really, really keep going. Because this time when I was coming home, I was no longer going back to mummy and daddy. I was going back to my room on my own, surrounded by other people in other rooms and down who all hated my guts. And it was who stood there and said, "No, Monty, I believe in you." And I say this, you know, behind a lot of strong masculine men is a woman who's there to nurture and I think nurture is the best word. And that's what she does. So yeah, truly wonderful. So that's how I met her.
And you know, the funny thing is most women that I know really want a strong man. I don't know any woman who goes, "Yeah, I want a weak emasculated man."
I know.
Do you know any women who want that?
Yeah.
You do?
My generation, absolutely. Oh.
not my generation.
Yeah, I know. That's the dismantlement of the family unit: mum, dad, masculine mum, feminine mum, and homeschooled children. And that's what I would want for my future. You know, is ideal in what I would see in a feminine partner: the beautiful balance of strident principles but also. Just lovely femininity and nurturing. And then there's my side, which is very masculine, very forceful. And I'm not as kind as she can be to people when I get quite frustrated. And whereas there's that balance, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful dynamic. You mentioned about campaigns. Myself and a few other individuals are working on a campaign at the moment, which of course you'll be familiar about. You should be familiar with the new pandemic treaty going to the World Health Organization. The overall slogan is the WHO, the people say no. And we've got lots of leaflets printed. We've been on the tubes doing outreach. We've been trying our best to rally up the troops on the streets, promote that as much as possible, and try our best to just. Our premise is you can't force people to listen to what you have to say, but you can give them a leaflet and hope that they read it. And that's what we do.
Do you work closely like with the yellow board people, yellow sign people?
Yeah, the yellow board people are great.
You know, like Francis O'Neill and everything?
Of course, Francis, yeah. Me and Francis have entered tremendous debates together, having some food. We just sit and suddenly the whole table is just looking at me and Francis just at each other. We're both very, very passionate about what we believe in. And I have a lot of respect for Francis. The yellow board people are great. And she introduced me to them later on. Because as I said before, I came to London. I lived out. I used to travel to London twice a week to go on the tubes and do outreach at one point. But it was a long way to come whilst I was doing to come do yellow boards since I moved to London. Yeah. And they're the great people.
It's just like we're so fragmented. There's so many different groups and so many individuals, which isn't a good thing as well.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, the enemy then has to attack all of us who are all doing different things. Mm-hmm. But it's also good to get together and work with people you know who are on the same page.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. On the bigger agenda and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I find absolutely wonderful when working with anyone who aligns with me and yourself is we come from really strange walks of life. I have friends who I would never expect to be my bestest and closest friends. And it's crazy. And I find that to be a perfect example to show people who think I'm crazy and think I'm a bad person and a right-wing fascist that it's not a case of saying, I'm not racist, my friends are black. It's got nothing to do with that. It's about the spectrum of love we have for one another just because we align on good quality, very normal, rational principles, and it brings us together. And I go out, we sometimes have these big meetups where we all go out for meals. And when we do this, it's just like we all return to this lovely atmosphere of friendship and kindness because we're all just good people, truly. There's not a bad bone in our bodies.
That's nice.
And I'm not going to sit here and say that there's no such thing as controlled opposition. I think there is definitely an element of that. I think, but if you're going to make those accusations, make them at the Just Stop Oil people. That's where I would allude it to. But willy-nilly calling controlled opposition on people without concrete evidence and without really knowing them personally.
And just because they're doing things slightly different from the way you'd want it to get done.
Is horrifically divisive and toxic. And I think if I was to give anyone a metaphor, and I do this a lot as to why it's a terrible thing to do, is the man who invented the guillotine was beheaded by the guillotine. And as soon as you start accusing people, eventually they're going to come for you too. And you'll end up...
Is that the case? I didn't know that.
Yeah. They'll end up killing what we have, which at one point was so strong. We all came under one simple principle. No lockdowns, no vaccinations, no masks. And now this is all sort of a bit further away and we're heading into sort of broadening our horizons in regards to the bigger picture now, looking at climate change and stuff. It all becomes very difficult to tie all the loose ends together and people get very bored and they want to accuse people of being this, that. As I said, I'm not got a massive following of millions of people, but I've even been called controlled opposition.
You have?
Yes. You know, based on the fact that there was one video where half of my face was covered and you can only see one eye. Ah, that makes me a Freemason, Illuminati, etc. So it's terribly...
I've been accused of that. The group that I can't stand, I once saw on Twitter this guy explaining why I'm Freemason. And like people go, oh, you got a skull. I've got a skull here.
Oh.
Like I'm a freaking orthopedic surgeon, man. I loved anatomy. I love bones.
Yeah.
And I love the I've got a foot there. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, I've got Star Wars. Take whatever you want to take from that.
Yeah, it's they will find anything. And I believe it's people who are very bored. Not all of them, but there are people out there that are very bored and don't get.
I'm not even going to say they're controlled. I would just say they're mistaken.
And want to maybe cause a little bit of trouble in places, which is not necessarily necessary. And I'm trying to be quite conservative in the way that I talk about it because I'm quite vocal about getting angry with people when it comes to calling controlled opposition. I find it very frustrating. I do, because I've seen the amount of damage it causes. And then I also know some of the people personally on both sides. I don't know Malhotra, but I know other people who have been called controlled opposition. And I will turn around and say, but I know them personally. They're not.
I just did the podcast with Haseem this morning.
Yeah.
He was here literally in your seat. Man, you know what? Honestly, at one point, I thought he was just a hero when I saw him on GB News for the first time speaking at. And that's the first time I ever came across him. I thought he was a hero. Yeah. Then the next minute, I thought he was the biggest villain ever because I thought, oh my God, he was pushing the jabs. Everybody's telling me he was pushing the jabs in the BAME. And then he wouldn't apologize for saying it. And I was thought, man, he's controlled opposite. I'm guilty of that. I mean, he's controlled. Oh, he's a narcissist. He's arrogant. Yeah. You know, so I've actually gone up and down my opinion of him. And I'm guilty of that. I'm human, mate. I'm human. And, you know, today, though, after speaking to him, I think he's a good egg. He sat in front of me.
Yeah.
And while there's a lot we don't agree with, there's a lot we do agree with. And while there's things I would do differently, you know what? I honestly can't say he's controlled at all. He's put a lot on the line for what he's doing. And hopefully he's on a journey and he's waking up. Everybody wakes up at different stages.
And everyone's allowed to make some mistakes.
Everyone's allowed to
make mistakes. Oh, my goodness. If I was to take every person who is like us and say, right, raise your hand if you never wore a mask. Well, I can raise my hand. But actually, I was in a very, very privileged situation.
I wore a mask.
There you go. Your controlled opposition. Just like that, if I was to capture a photograph of you in a mask.
And it was like sometimes the battles, like when do I want to fight this battle?
Exactly.
Sometimes I'd go in without a mask. Sometimes, you know, I would get hassled and I'd be like, just fracking do it for 2 seconds. You know, I don't give a shit. You know, it's just not a battle I'm willing to fight. I don't care. You know, choosing the path of least resistance. I'll give you an example as well. We went to Portugal. My mom took us on holiday to Portugal last year. First time abroad in 4 years, right?
Yep.
We're going for, and I don't want to go for the scanner thing. You know where you put your hands up? Right? I don't want to go for that.
Earth.
I said, look, just do me a pat down. Because the last time I remember when I went to the States, they just did a pat down, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I just want that. This time, for some reason, the guy goes, no, you can't. We don't do pat downs. You need to go into a separate room somewhere. I'm like, we've got a flight to catch. It's not my problem. You're the one that wanted this pat down.
Mm.
And he goes, we need to take you and your family and your kids all to the side. I said, well, take us. Well, we're short-staffed. We need to wait for the manager. So now my wife, my kids and everything, we're all standing to the side. We have to take our things off the security trolley thing, back, put everything. I'm waiting now. And everyone's looking at us. We're holding everyone up. The kids are like, oh, no.
So you eventually give in.
I eventually give in. Now, does that mean I'm controlled opposition?
No, it doesn't. That's why it's about balance of principles and what you strive for. I mean, there are some things I will not budge on, and I will push things to the nth degree in order to not relent.
Yeah.
So at the time, if someone tried to ask me to wear a mask, it doesn't matter if I was just nipping into the shop to get myself some carrots, I would not put one on and I would just keep going and going and going.
Well, that's me now. I'll be honest with you. I'm like that now. If someone said to me now, oh, you need to wet my, I'd be like, frack that. Do you know what? I would rather go hungry.
Yeah.
You're not going to muzzle me. Yeah. So, you know, we're on different journeys.
Absolutely. It's simple. Yeah. Control opposition. Stay away from using that term so frivolously. I want to say. Because it's truly divisive and causes more problems than it solves.
And that ultimately serves the evil predator class.
Yeah, that's very what good. It's very true. It's very true.
Because that's what they want.
Yep.
That's what they want. All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I feel like we've covered everything. We've
been on a long journey.
We've covered you being a white racist and transphobic and misogynistic and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, I've always thought it must be very difficult for people like you, white young males. You know, when I grew up in the 80s, it was difficult being me. A young brown immigrant kid, Muslim background.
Yeah.
It was hard. And, you know, there are things that were said and done that were not right. And there's some racism, but not the majority of the time. So the vast majority of my interactions were great. And that's what people need to understand. But I feel like the pendulum has definitely gone too far the other way, where just being a white, straight young kid now is bad. You're disadvantaged. Am I right? Or is that a real problem?
I'm known for turning around and saying to people at university, which they just couldn't believe I said this. I said, I am more oppressed than you. Very simple. But the people I was talking to were black, or they were mixed race, or they were gay, or they were whatever they want to be fair, on the day. And from their perspective, what I just said was so insulting. Because it was like they felt so affronted because they'd never heard someone say that. And I said, why? I said, because I'm white and because I'm straight, because I hold some quite, you know, traditional British standard values, nothing that extreme. And you, through your toxic, envious vanity, are insistent on destroying.
And insecurity.
And insecurity. Well, they would claim I'm insecure. But the difference is, and this is actually, I'm glad actually you've reminded me of this, is I always used to say, I used to smile when they're coming at me. And I'd say, the difference is, I've affected you, but you've not affected me. You're angry. You're affected. I can see it in your face. What I've said's really troubled you. But tonight, I will sleep okay. And tonight, I will wake up in the morning and I won't have an issue. Whereas you're going to think about this. So that's the key difference between me and you. I'm all right, but you're not. Ask yourself why.
That's a really good point, mate.
Thank you.
That's really good. But it's true. The problem is we've just given power and, you know, so much power to people who are really quite weak bullies. You know, they're quite weak, insecure, fragile, and we've made them into bullies.
Yeah.
That's what's happened, unfortunately.
Yeah, and worse than that, we've backed them up.
This is what I mean, by giving them the power.
We've supported them and given them that platform. I mean, if I had one kind of final message to what this entire conversation, which has been great, by the way, thank you so much for having me on. And thank you so much to your little WhatsApp groups, which tracked me down and put my name here, is that I would say, and I always direct what I say to my generation, is have an opinion, stand up for what you believe in, get in contact with me, very easy. I'm sure you can link my Twitter or something. And if anybody feels vulnerable in their opinion, even though they just know that it's right, because this is what's simple now, is our opinions are no longer complicated. It's not like we're trying to explain something so complex that it takes months of research. No, we're talking about fundamental principles which we should live by. And if you, and I know my generation, I'm talking to you right now, you don't necessarily believe and commit to all of the mainstream's ideologies, and you know that in your heart it's wrong, stand up, say no, and join me and a handful of other individuals of my generation and say no. And I'll repeat, there's a million people saying yes, you can always say no. That's the most fundamental key to freedom.
Mate, I love it. And you know what? I'm telling you right now, the tribe is getting bigger and bigger, is getting more emboldened, and is getting more confident in saying no. More and more people are coming around to our side, and they're realizing, you know what? We're right. We're not crazy. We're not crazy. We're not the fringe. We're not the crazy, you know, fascist, anti-vaxxers, conspiracy theorists. Actually, we're people who've got common sense.
Yep.
We're the ones based, grounded in science and truth and right and light. And we're not going to take any more of this nonsense.
No, good luck trying to stop.
Yeah, good luck, right? Good luck. It ain't going to happen.
It really won't.
Monty, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Seriously, God bless you, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye.